Okay, welcome back to Coast with Dr. James Doty. We're going to take your phone calls this hour as we still talk about his work into the magic shop. And if you've ever been in a magic shop, you know exactly what he's talking about. Okay, we're back with Dr. James Doty. Doc, losing $80 million in 6 weeks, what was your mood like?
You know, it's funny, after that happened, I get a call from the Oprah Winfrey show, and they said, oh my God, this is horrible. And this was because there was an article in the Wall Street Journal. And she said, you know, God, how could you, you must be devastated. I mean, your whole world destroyed. And, you know, the reality was, though, that I am a neurosurgeon. I get paid more than the top 1% of people in the world. And frankly, it would have been insulting for me to complain about that. I'm one of the most blessed people in the world. And while certainly I had a wonderful time, if you will, on some level in that circumstance, as I told you, I was also one of the worst periods of my life. But not having that, frankly, did not change my personal circumstance that much. So I wasn't, even though I was $3 million in debt and had to pay all of that back and spent some time doing that, I was better off than the vast, vast majority of people. So while on some level, yes, it was wonderful to have that experience, I was not devastated in any way. In fact, I was thankful that I was in the position to have had that experience. So as much as people would like to say, that must have been the most horrible 6 weeks of your life, it was an interesting 6 weeks, but it certainly was not the most horrible 6 weeks. And as I told you, it ultimately led for me to have the best life, because that's when my eyes opened and I really let myself out of prison, because I went back during that period and thought about the experience that I had with Ruth and all the lessons she taught me. And I realized that the lesson of opening your heart and being present and caring and being of service was really the lesson that gives you the most meaning. And by giving my money away in that circumstance, it has now allowed me to have the most wonderful experiences, one of which is to creating the center at Stanford that examines the neuroscience of compassion, altruism, and how to change your brain. But it's allowed me to develop a relationship with the Dalai Lama, who frankly is our founding benefactor.
Oh, really?
He gave me,
how cool
yeah,
is that?
He gave me the largest sum of money he's ever given to a non-Tibetan cause after our very first meeting. It's also allowed me to meet some of the greatest spiritual and religious leaders around the world and develop relationships with them, including Eckhart Tolle, Deepak Chopra, the Reverend Joan Campbell Brown, Desmond Tutu, Sri Sri Ravi Shankar. And it's interesting because I'm an atheist, and people say, how is it even possible that you could have these close, deep relationships with these people, and you're not even part of their religion? In fact, Glenn Beck, I was with him recently, and he asked
me. He's an old friend of mine.
Yeah. And in fact, I was on his show, and he said, you know, how is this possible where he knows the Pope, et cetera, et cetera? And I said, because these people are not, evolved spiritual and religious leaders are not interested in dogma. They're interested in, do you have an open heart? Do you care? Are you authentic? We know people who can spout off all the dogma of a religion and frankly are not nice people.
No, they lack those points.
Absolutely. It's not what you say, it is what you do. And these people can see through that in a microsecond. And that's allowed me to have these wonderful, wonderful experiences all over the world. It's allowed me to do my work at Stanford, which is very fulfilling, as well as being a neurosurgeon, which is also very fulfilling. And it has allowed me to really understand what a meaningful life is and have even greater success, not only professionally, but emotionally, spiritually, as a human being. And it's also given me great insights into the power of the mind to change who we are, what we are, and really live up to our potential.
Well, it's an amazing ability to do that. Let me ask you about people who are negative. Does that affect their ability to succeed? They're
Oh,
just, they've got
absolutely.
this black cloud over their heads.
Yeah, as an example, when a negative person walks into a room, everything changes, doesn't it? People become stiff. They're not talkative. They're not communicative. They have fear, anxiety, especially if that negative person is their boss. And you compare that as an example to someone who walks in a room, has a smile on their face, greets everyone, asks everyone how they're doing, has, sincere connection, and everyone relaxes, everyone calms down, everyone wants to perform for that person, everyone wants to be with that person. It has a huge, huge dramatic effect on your surroundings. And this is why I was saying earlier, these lessons that Ruth taught me, my circumstance didn't change. It's how I reacted to the circumstance. And the example we're giving is, it took me from having a negative outlook to sort of saying, oh, nothing's going to work out, I'm unhappy, the world's against me, my life sucks, to sitting saying, wow, I can't wait for the sun to rise because, it's going to be a great day, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what's happened. And even if it's not my ideal world, there's still great things and great possibilities out there. And again, when you change how you react to the world changes how it reacts to you and really opens up the door of your prison to let you have real freedom.
I got to ask you a neurosurgeon question too.
Okay.
Are you seeing a lot of incidents of tumors on the brain, primarily because of maybe cell phones?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's certainly one that a lot of people have concerns about. And, it would seem natural. Now, what people forget is that we are bombarded by radio waves and variety of electromagnetic radiation all day long.
Yes.
And while certainly there is some evidence with these high-powered transmitters of electromagnetic radiation that it can have some effect on your physiology, at least the studies we know to date, there is not any correlation. But of course, it's interesting because that you say that because I just had a patient the other day, and he did come in with a brain tumor, and the brain tumor actually was right near his ear.
Yep. It
And
happened to my sister too, Doc.
yes, and he said, I know this is from a cell phone. I know this is from a cell phone. And I said, well, are you right or left-handed? And he said, well, I'm right-handed. I said, well, your tumor's on the left side. Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, but see, I'm right-handed, but I hold my phone on my left hand because when you do text messaging, you're texting with your right hand. So I
that's
do hold it up.
in his case, though, he kept it on the opposite
Yeah.
side. But it's like many things. I mean, certainly we can make a correlation, but that doesn't necessarily relate to causality. And that's where a lot of people get confused. And it's easy to get confused because
Sure.
it seems natural. But again, like I said, at least the science we have to date does not support that.
All right, let's take some calls for the rest of the hour as they line up for you. We'll go to our wild card line. Bernadette is with us in the state of Georgia. Hello, Bernadette. Welcome, and thanks for calling.
No, George, this is Bernadette Brooks from formerly of St. Petersburg, Florida, and I'm in Athens, Alabama.
Oh, you're in Alabama now. How did Georgia pop up on this thing?
Well, there's an app.
You still there?
Still here.
Well, you're breaking up a little bit, but go ahead with your question.
Okay, actually, I want to ask the doctor who I'm just my mind.
Yeah, we lost you. Try to get her number, Tom, and call back with a better number for her. We lost her. Let's go to Ray in Modesto, California, on the wild card line. Hey, Ray, go ahead.
Well, hey guys. Well, I had something I was going to talk about, but it's something that the speaker just said that I kind of changed my what I wanted to say based on what he just said. I would like the speaker to reconsider the fact that he considers himself an atheist. He doesn't sound to me like an atheist. I would like the speaker to consider whether or not he considers himself an atheist based upon some other person's definition of God. To me, he sounds.
Well, I think that's a good. I think that's a good point. Most people who use the term God believe it is a God who is present with them, who makes decisions based on their actions and things of this nature. And then there's another subset who sort of see God, or what they call God, has created everything, but beyond that, he has no further connection. If I was to use the term God, at least for me, it is an appreciation of the incredible reality of our presence, but beyond that, I don't believe that he or she or it is following everything that I do, or punishes me or rewards me for anything I do. And that may seem strange, since I do have these connections with different spiritual leaders, but you know, the Dalai Lama has said, my religion is kindness. And he's also said that it's okay to be selfish in one instance, and that's when you're being of service or caring for others or relieving the suffering of others, because from a physiologic point of view, from a health point of view, from a meaning point of view, you're actually helping yourself. So I selfishly practice kindness because it benefits me as well as other people. And if I were to have a religion, that is my religion.
And of course, the definition of an atheist is someone who not necessarily is not a believer. You just are looking for the facts to believe, right?
Yeah. And, you know, the challenge is, and it's interesting because several studies have been done that show that actually people who choose to be atheists actually oftentimes have more knowledge of various religions than many of the people who say they are of a particular faith. In fact, there's an interesting movie that was done called The God Who Wasn't There. And I won't go into all the details, but basically it was an individual who was he grew up an evangelical Christian.
Yeah.
And he went outside of a Billy Graham revival thing, and he asked 10 questions of nominally religious people, fairly simple questions. And the average number that could be answered by these Christians who were, you know, obviously religious because they attended these events was 4 out of 10. Meaning that for many people, they may say they're Christian or whatever faith they are, but it's a very, very thin veneer of actual knowledge of their faith.
So why are you not an agnostic?
Well, you know, an agnostic, as you were mentioning, is a person who doesn't necessarily say, I have no belief. It's one who says, well, I just don't know because the facts aren't there, but it's potentially possible. My own belief is that, at least from everything I have experienced, is that at least in terms of expecting something beyond our present reality, there's not one shred of evidence in my mind to demonstrate that that exists. But the thing is, I don't need it to exist. You know, there's a subset of people who, of course, have this existential crisis of, geez, what happens when I die? You know, because this is another thing that creates anxiety and fear, because we're one of the few species that experiences a perception of a future. If it's uncertain, this creates anxiety and fear. If you have a belief that there is something beyond death, then it results in a calmness, which alleviates that anxiety and fear. So I don't need to have that to hold on to not experience that anxiety and fear. It's interesting, I was having a conversation with our mutual friend, Glenn Beck.
Yeah.
And I said, Glenn, all I know, I don't know what the future holds because it has not happened. The past I cannot change. The only thing I have is being with you at this moment. And this moment is what I want to make the best of because it's the only thing that I have with certainty.
And, you know, he's very spiritual.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He's very religious, and actually we're good friends. But it shows you, and in fact, you know, he is probably a little bit more right than I am, at least.
Maybe.
But the point here is that I can be friends with Glenn, I can be friends with the Dalai Lama, I can be friends with Hindus, I can be friends with Muslims, and close friends, respectful, love them, embrace them, but also respect what their beliefs
right.
are.
And they you.
Exactly.
Let's go to Dr. Sleepless, that's his name, from Portland, Oregon. Hello, Dr. Sleepless, go ahead.
Hello, George. Hello, Dr. Doty. You have said the magic word. I am not a doctor, not a scientist, despite my name, but I'm a musician, but I've been compelled to write a book called Parasynesthesia, The Finish Line for the Rat Race. And when you brought up the parasympathetic nervous system, it just lit up an idea. I know nothing really about any of this except what I research. And would you confirm my theory on this, that the parasympathetic nervous system is responsible for basically all the good feelings that we experience, including love, music appreciation, spiritual connection, affection, and sleep?
No, I think that's exactly right. And in fact, what's interesting, the point you bring up is that this is the other half of my book, if you will, or in fact, the most important part. This connection between our brainstem, and our heart is represented by a very, very robust set of nerves that communicate with our heart, with our internal organs. And it is a two-way street, this communication, and both have an effect on the other. And we have the ability to teach ourselves to not be controlled, if you will, based on our evolution by our sympathetic nervous system, which mitigates fear, fright, and disgust, frankly, to push ourselves over to increase our vagal our tone, which is the nerve that transmits this information. And when you increase your vagal tone, you increase your parasympathetic nervous system function, and you're absolutely right. It is responsible for the release of these hormones that are associated with a sense of calmness, what we call affiliative behavior, connecting with others. It causes our heart rate to slow down, our blood pressure to decrease, our immune system to be boosted, and our stress hormones to be at their baseline level. And when all of that occurs, our physiology is working at its best. And then when that happens, our mental state is dramatically improved, and it increases ultimately our longevity.
All right, let's take some final calls when we come back in just a moment with Dr. James Doty as we talk about his work Into the Magic Shop. And welcome back, Dr. James Doty with us, his book, Into the Magic Shop. How did you enjoy writing?
Actually, it was, in some ways, it was a painful experience. In other ways, a cathartic experience. But ultimately, a wonderful experience because it allowed me to sort of relive the good, but also appreciate the present.
When you talk about, Dr., the goodness, the opening of your heart that you didn't do before, what were you like before? I mean, were you like one of those corporate execs that everybody hated?
No, I wouldn't say that. I always, if you will, cared because, you know, I certainly still felt my own pain when I would see others in pain. But I was focused really on monetary success. And when you focus so deeply on that, and it's not as if I would step on others or take advantage of others because that wasn't really never my style, but ignoring people, not being present for people, was what was happening to me because I was so focused on this belief that happiness would be if I got a certain level of monetary success, that I was ignoring all the happiness and goodness around me, if you will, because I was always looking for the next thing I would accomplish, which would ultimately give me meaning and purpose. Yet I was never present for the wonderful things that were happening to me while I was chasing after those other things.
All right, let's go back to the calls. Jack is in Long Beach, California. Let's go to you, Jack. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Okay, hey, George, you must apologize first because I don't want to blow your impression of me, but I have to take the good doctor to task on a few things here.
All right.
Now, in the course of listening to you guys converse back and forth, I've kind of changed my tune from when I first called in this evening. So I'm going to kind of tweak my statements from what I had originally wanted to say.
Okay.
So I'll meet the doctor at maybe 60-40. Let's say he's 60% right, 40% wrong, or maybe even 50-50 after he hears me say some things. I myself had a bad childhood, and I believe right now that it's not mind over matter, but rather it's matter over mind, because I'm in the world first, I'm of the world first, and everything that happens to me is subject and consequent of me being in the world. So, I mean, that's one circumstance. And maybe Ruth in that magic shop did know some magic after all, because, you know, you can't just wish yourself out of negative situations. Negative situations happen because of oneself and also happen because of circumstance. So you can't just always, you know, placate and medicate a situation by just mind over matter wishing yourself out of situation. Now, there is some merit to some mind over matter, but for the most part, it's matter over mind, because we're bound by the laws of physics in the universe. You can't just wish yourself out of any situation. And George, you know, a week or two ago, about 2 weeks ago, you had a caller, was late at night.
Always late, Jack. It's always late.
Well, she was adamant, and I know when I bring this up, you're going to remember the call, but she was adamant that she could make predictions, and she made predictions ever since she was a little girl to her father,
right,
and to family members, that all of our days are predestined, all of our days are planned, all of our tomorrows are planned. And I have evidence of that myself, because I see that more and more that we are, whether we're in a simulation or whatever, we're pre-fated and predestined rather. And your seat could say, your seat on this merry-go-round could say congressman, or it could say radio host, or it could say mass murderer or criminal. And you just happen to fulfill that quote unquote role or destiny for your life. And so, I mean, it's like probably in some alternate universe, Donald Trump is living in a gutter, and he's not the successful person he is in this universe. And likewise, some of us who are living in a gutter in this universe are also
kings and prophets
in the next.
All right, let's get the doctor's reaction to that. But you said 60-40, so that's pretty close. But, Doc, go ahead.
Well, first of all, I think what he thinks I said is not exactly what I said. First of all, I never implied that there's magical thinking that takes you out of a circumstance and suddenly magically transports you to another circumstance. What I very specifically said was it takes work, and we spent a little bit of time talking about that. Nothing magically changes just because you wish it to change. Things change because you change how you think, which then causes you to have a set of actions, which then change, if you want to use the term matter or the physical reality for you. So that's not quite what I said. So I don't think that in any way did I imply that it's all some sort of magic, because it does take hard work. I did not achieve what I achieved by sitting twiddling my thumbs wishing for the world to be different. I achieved what I achieved by understanding through the efforts of Ruth and the efforts of many people over thousands of years to understand how to see the world, if you will, with clarity, and then understand from that experience how to change the world through effort, work, and insight. And those are far different things than I think what the caller was interpreting. In terms of this idea which you mentioned regarding the former guest, we'll never know, right? Because one could always say, I was predestined to be where I am sitting at today. And if tomorrow I did something horrendous, you could say, well, I was predestined to do that. But none of us will ever know that. Again, all that we can know is that there is every bit of evidence from all the scientific research that has been compiled that when you change how you see the world, when you use certain contemplative practice such as mind training or meditation, it has an effect on your physiology. It has an effect on those around you. And we do know that exists. We know it affects your genetic expression. We know it affects your health. We know it affects your longevity. These are scientific facts, and it's not magical thinking.
Is Ruth still with you? Is she still alive?
No. You know, that was in 1968. I was 12, so she would be well over 100. She was probably 50 when I met her.
Okay.
Now, maybe she is, but actually, when I wrote the book, I actually researched the whole experience and went back and found her grandson, actually, and he confirmed that she was, in fact, exactly as I described, and the recollection that I had, indeed, of the magic shop and that experience. But she really was a wonderful lady, and that actually brings up a point, which is, as you experienced in your own life, each one of us, regardless of our circumstance, our financial resources, really does have the ability to positively impact another person's life. And many times, even with simple acts, that interaction can have a profound effect on the trajectory of their life.
Well, no doubt about that. Lyman is in Richmond, Virginia. Welcome to the program, Lyman. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question to the doctor, a couple of them. As an atheist, that's very interesting to me. I've been going to church for 40 years and still can't seem to get religion as is traditional. My question is, do you think that people anthropomorphize God, and we tend to think of God as a he or a she and as an actual person, which I don't believe? And do you believe that death is actually a matter of recycling? No, we don't really. We're made up of atoms and matter is can't be created or destroyed, so we're actually recycled. And my third question is, do you believe that God, what they call God, is actually logic? Logic prevails and predestines everything. I believe that everything is predestined, and what do you think of that? Thank you.
I agree with every statement you said. You know, I think we certainly do anthropomorphize God. We, as people say, the Bible says, you know, God created us in his image, which of course they say he, and that's a natural tendency because we like to believe that there is something exceptionable or exceptionable about us, that we are important. There is a natural tendency to do that. Whatever it is that created us or whatever has resulted in our presence in this world, I don't believe it has any he, she, or it. It just is. In terms of your other statement, certainly, and this has been said many times before, we are stardust.
We're
a combination
we're
of atoms, and in fact, they're always changing. If you look at our birth to now, there's not a single atom which is the same as when we were born. And so we are a combination of these things, and when we die, if you will, we are recycled. Our atoms go off into the universe and then are attached to, if you will, energy, and reconnect with the universe again and inhabit perhaps the life of another. And what was the last question to recall?
That's okay. Let's take some more calls because we're almost out of time and they're still calling like crazy here for you. So you got 2 out of 3. That's pretty good. Let's let's go to Jay in Flora Home, Florida. Hi, Jay. Good morning to you. Welcome to the show. I guess not. You're not welcome.
Lost, Jay.
Goodbye, Jay. Let's go to Tommy in Kentucky, first-time caller. Tommy, go ahead.
How you doing, George?
Good.
You took my call.
Thank you.
It's Dr. Danks. You're very, very intelligent. Very smart man. I was just wondering, you know so much about the human anatomy. How did you miss the spirit or soul? God was nailed on the cross to save our souls. And you may not know him, but he died for you.
Well, there's a little bit of a spiritualism there for you, James.
Well, it was beyond spiritualism. Of course, it's Christianity. And, of course, the challenge with that is if you really had a loving God, and there are 4 or 5 billion people who aren't Christians, what is the explanation for why he left them out, right? And that, I think, is one of the challenges. My own belief is that religions are culturally driven. They're an explanation to give us comfort regarding our presence in this world and why we are here. And actually, for many people, give a structure of morals and ethics that allow them to live a good life, at least in its best iteration. Certainly, it is hard for me to imagine that a just God would hate
and punish,
theoretically, are made in his image. Let's say gays or lesbians or transgender people or black people or other races or other religions. It is logically does not make sense to me. You know, I saw a wonderful sign on a church. It said, God would rather love an atheist than a Christian who hates, right? And I think that true faith and even being a true Christian is you open your heart to everyone because everyone is made in God's image.
All right, let's go back to Bernadette in Alabama. She's back with us. Go ahead, Bernadette. Let's see if we got a better connection with you.
Thank you so much. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Hey, quickly, I know you're running out of time. Dr. Doty, I am the perfect specimen for your program, and let me tell you why in a nutshell. I've survived 4 years old of being molested, 9 years old being molested.
Oh, gosh.
11 years of my life, my young life, before I was 15, I was in mental health hospitals, state-run. I was a ward of the state. I never completed a grade of school beyond the fourth grade, but I taught school in Louisiana as a substitute school teacher. I've had 149 jobs. I work for billionaire Melvin Simbler in St. Petersburg. I am currently in Athens, Alabama to finish my book, which I've titled Hashtag A Made in America Whore. I also overcame drugs. I smoked cigarettes for 42 years. I cold turkeyed. George Norrie, I recently told you when I first discovered you last October that I had just cold turkeyed smoking marijuana. I'm still drug-free.
Good for you.
And right now, because I was a victim of a mesh implant for a hernia repair, I'm overcoming my physical challenges because exactly what Dr. Doty is saying, because I learned to harness my mind and my thoughts. I also read the book you had Dr. Joe Dispenza on, Mr. Norrie, with Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. I was diagnosed as a child manic depressive, which now the name is bipolar, but I stopped calling myself that. I stopped wearing the labels that people had put on me, and I'm 59 years old, still determined to just become somebody that can share and help people.
Well, you seem like you're doing it all right. And, Doctor, we are almost out of time, but she's going the right way.
Well, Bernadette, congratulations to you, and best of luck to you on your path. You're on a path that all of us are on, hopefully, which is trying to be the best that we can be and to be of service to others. And if we can do that, if we can improve ourselves, if we can improve the lives of another, then our lives have had purpose and meaning.
All right, my friend. Thank you, Doc, for being on the program. Really appreciate it. Good luck with the book, Into the Magic Shop. Great techniques and some good tips there to better your own life. Up next, the Happy Medium joins us on Coast to Coast AM. Kim Russo, don't touch your dial.